former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, folks. Welcome back to the second episode of this interesting story about the rise of the five families in New York City, the reigning monarchy, if you will, of the organized crime in the United States is the five families and the bosses in New York City, and the boss of all bosses will always be from New York City. I don't know. It's not quite like that today, but for a long time it was. It's good to be back here in the studios of the Big Dumb Fun Show, Studio 4 in the beautiful Ice House in Midtown Kansas City. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
You know, I promised you last week, folks, that I would tell you if I got over 120 mile an hour. And Aaron, guess what?
You got over 120 mile an hour?
I did.
That's crazy.
It scared the shit out of me. But, you know, I've got new tires and everything on it, and I got to 128 mile an hour, and I thought, oh, my God. And I let off. I'm gonna keep going.
If you're gonna do this every week, you're gonna have to only inch it up.
I'm gonna have to keep going.
I've got to jumping by it. 8 miles an hour, and the next 10 weeks we're gonna be at 200 miles an hour.
I know. Well, I'm only as I get higher up, I'm probably gonna maybe go up only a mile an hour a week. I don't know. We'll see. Let's, folks, just hang on till I get to the very top speed of this Kawasaki Z1000 motorcycle. And then, you know, as we talked before, I have to have high performance parts, and my good friend Dan Matt, retired motorcycle policeman, works on it, and he recommends K&N for my oil filter. He's always already put those in, and he's going to put in a K&N air filter as soon as he believes it needs to be replaced.
I looked at their website. Here it says that they've got a 1,000,000-mile limited warranty. And apparently they'll last up to 50,000 miles between servicing. How many miles a year do you think you ride?
Oh, I only ride about 900,000 miles a year, Aaron. Well, not really.
Well, at 128 miles an hour, that probably doesn't take you long.
I go around the world four or five times. No, I probably ride 15,000, maybe 18,000 a year.
Well, I mean, here in Kansas City, you know, the wintertime, it's probably a little harder to be riding than it is in other parts of the country, like sunny Southern California, where K&N Engineering is from, out of Riverside, California.
Yeah, you know, Dan said one reason he used their parts was they were really high quality and they were made in the United States.
It says here, K&N invented the reusable high-flow cotton air filter in 1969 and has been perfecting the technology ever since. Now, we were talking about Albert Anastasia, although his family name from Italy was Anastasio, when he, I guess, immigrated, jumped ship.
He jumped ship,
Jumped ship.
He was one of the original illegal immigrants, wasn't he? Well, there's a lot of illegal immigrants back then. They didn't care so much back in those days.
He was Anastasio. He and his brothers jumped the ship, but he was born the 26th of September in 1902, and we covered some territory there about rather his notorious kind of rise of having arrived in New York City and going through a series of criminal activities that got him caught by the law.
Yeah, he did a few terms up in Sing Sing, but he seemed like the witnesses always disappeared on his crimes.
Or they decided that they just didn't want to testify.
And then he was smart enough or lucky enough or both to fall in with people who were forward-thinking, like Charles Lucky Luciano. And when Lucky Luciano decided that he wanted to modernize the mafia and actually was the originator and the first boss of bosses of the modern five families in New York City, created the commission, which, you know, up until recent times would still meet once in a while and make decisions all over the United States. You know, that was the commission meeting in 1957 that Nick Civella was introduced as the new boss of Kansas City in upstate New York. It was famously raided by the New York State Police and called the Appalachian Convention. But Albert Anastasia got hooked up with Lucky Luciano, and he actually helped him rise up. Luciano came up with a plan to kill off one of the old guys that was called called Mustache Pete's at the time, the old mafia bosses that had extorted money from shopkeepers and called themselves the Black Handers, a guy named Joe the Boss or Joe Massarian. Anastasia and Vito Genovese and a guy named Bugsy Siegel and Joe Adnois, these all became, you know, famous mobsters all up through the 50s. They killed Joe the Boss or Joe Massarian, and that allowed Lucky Luciano to start his rise. And within another year, they killed the other old Mustache Pete, a guy named Salvatore Maranzano. And at that point in time, that's when the National Crime Syndicate was formed, and Albert Anastasia was moving on up. He was an underboss in one of the five families at that time, which eventually became the Vito Genovese family. During this time, in the 30s, they formed something that became known in the popular culture as Murder Incorporated. Actually, they called themselves, among themselves, they were the Brownsville Boys. And what was interesting about this group, Aaron, was it wasn't just Italians. You know, these ethnic groups, many times you think if they're mafia, then they must be Italian. And to be a made member of what would be called the La Cosa Nostra Mafia, you would have to be Italian. And they had this thing called the Commission, which was just for the Italian-American mafias. But they also, Lucky Luciano, knew that they needed to bring in some other elements to this in order to be more successful. And they brought the Jewish guys into it, and they called it the National Crime Syndicate. And in this National Crime Syndicate, he needed an enforcement arm, which Albert Anastasia, who was a known killer by then, was selected to head up. And they included some Jewish killers in that, and one of them was Louis Lepke Buchalter. And they were the enforcement arm, and they helped consolidate power. And anybody that fell awry or askance, or not looked askance, now, I can't think of the word that came into a dispute with any of the five families, if Lucky Luciano approved, he would send this group of killers headed by Albert Anastasia, kill them.
Now, and over a course of 10 years, Murder, Inc. Committed between 400 and 1,000 murders, many of which were never solved. The ones that were, they never pinned to these guys, apparently.
No, nobody is an individual. I guess that had to be from intelligence. If somebody, probably if anybody that was killed was connected to the mob and the rackets in 1930s, 40s, 50s, New York City, they probably said it was Murder Incorporated because it made for pretty good press. And, you know, they like to sell newspapers, so they pump those things up. Lucky Luciano, during the 30s, 1936, he was convicted of compulsory prostitution, and he got a 30 to 50-year sentence. And that's when Vito Genovese became the acting boss, but then he was forced to flee to Italy after he was indicted on the murder, and Frank Costello became the acting boss of the Luciano crime family during this time. Frank Costello was a guy who, he was mainly a gambler, and he liked to mediate things. He liked to keep the murders down, but he still knew that every once in a while you got to do something. And so, like in May of 1939, Albert Anastasia ordered the murder of Morris Diamond, an official of a trucking union in Brooklyn. He was a Teamsters official who had opposed Louis Lepke's Buchalter's attempts to gain controls in the garment district in Manhattan. If you remember, you know, there were always trying to take over the unions, not only on the in the Teamsters, on the truck routes, but on the docks and the longshoremen, but also in the garment district. They had they hand sewed all those clothes in the garment district, and so there was a lot of people. When you got a lot of people and you organize them as a labor union, then there's a lot of money. And if you can then get control of those labor unions, you can extort money from the men who actually were trying to run these companies and earn a living.
Well, and somebody like Morris Diamond, who maybe was a, you know, a pretty straight up guy because he was running that union and decided that he didn't want to listen to what the mobsters had to say.
Yeah, more than likely. And they killed anybody in the unions who opposed them. Like I said, that's what that movie All on the Waterfront was about. Anastasia organized the murder of a Peter Panto, who was an international longshoreman union activist during this time, and he was trying to get some democratic reforms in the ILA locals, and he refused to be intimidated by these mob-connected ILA officials. 1939, he disappeared, and his body was later recovered on a farm in New Jersey. There's another member of the Murder Incorporated, a guy named Abe Reles, R-E-L-E-S, Reles. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. He would have been a Jewish mobster. He was a gang leader of the Brownsville Boys at the time and been supplying Anastasia and his Murder Incorporated with hitmen for a long time. He caught a case for a murder, and he was got the death penalty, and he decided he would testify for the government, which was pretty much unheard of at that point in time. His testimony convicted seven murders of Murder Incorporated, and this probably when the term Murder Incorporated came out was in 1941 when Reles became an informant.
Did they have a witness protection program at that point?
Well, that's the deal. They didn't have much of one. They had a little bit. They were trying to protect old Abe, but he had information that could implicate Anastasia in this 1939 Diamond and Panto murders we just talked about, both of whom were, one was a
trucking union guy,
trucking
Morris
union,
Diamond.
One was an ILA, the International Longshoremen's Union. Albert Anastasia offered a $100,000 reward for Reles' murder. Well, November the 12th, 1941, Abe Reles is being guarded in a sixth-floor room during an ongoing trial. I don't know how close he was being guarded, but he's found laying on the...
Wait, he's on the sixth floor of a building. It must have been a federal building?
No, it was just a hotel room. It was like, during the trial, he was being guarded in a hotel room. November 12th, 1941... Our friend Abe Reles is found dead on the restaurant roof outside the Half Moon Hotel in Coney Island. He was being guarded on the sixth floor of the Half Moon Hotel during the trial. Now, this is 1941. By 1951, a grand jury in New York City rules that he accidentally died while climbing down to the fifth floor trying to use sheets tied to a heating radiator. He supposedly was trying to escape and slipped and fell. However, it's been long rumored and many people suspect that they paid off the policemen who were guarding him and threw him out the window.
And then tied a sheet to the radiator and threw it out to make it look like he was trying to escape.
Right. I mean, why would he try to escape? It didn't make sense.
Maybe he didn't feel like the police were really there to protect him.
Maybe not. I mean, where would he go?
I mean, if he's on the sixth floor of a hotel, law enforcement knows where he's at.
They're guarding
his room, but yet he still ends up dead.
That's true.
And it took him 10 years?
Took him 10 years.
To figure out that he actually just slipped and fell.
Yeah. Well, you know, things were different in 1941 to 1951 in New York City, just like in Chicago. It's pretty corrupt. And I would probably side with the people that said they paid off the police and they let him somebody in, they threw him out the window. I would side with that argument. What would you think, Aaron?
You know, if I was a police officer, you'd probably just take that cash and put it in your black bag.
But how arrogant could you be? How?
But if there's two of them, you got to pay them both off.
Right. But then you have the knowledge of who paid for this murder and who did the murder. So you got to sit with that all your life. And how arrogant can you be that you're guarding a guy in a hotel room and he takes a dive out the hotel room window, and then you're going to say, oh, he committed suicide, or oh, he tried to escape going down these sheets that he tied together and slipped and fell.
Well, the Anastasia, who offered a $100,000 reward, this was kind of, must have been at some point, some public knowledge. There's actually a reference point in your document here that probably talks, going back to a paper or newspaper or something.
Yeah.
Where it actually said this was what was going on.
Yeah, that's what was going on, that he'd offered, the intelligence was at the time that he had offered a $100,000 reward because Relis could put Anastasia into this Punto, and I can't remember the other guy's name now.
Morris
Diamond and Punto's murder. So Anastasia was looking at maybe the electric chair back then.
But Relis was not the only person that was looking to implicate him?
He was the smoking gun for Anastasia. Nobody else. He was the main witness against him. If he'd have lived, he would have been the only one that could have put him in.
Referring to the Anastasia case, is it not a fact that you made the comment at about that time that the police had a perfect case of murder in the first degree against Mr. Anastasia?
For indictment.
For indictment?
Yes, sir.
Well, why would you say that if you knew you didn't have the evidence to give two witnesses?
I'll come to that later, but I'll answer the question now.
I wish you would.
I had the witnesses, but I didn't have Anastasio.
And what is the other witness, Relis?
Relis? Oh, I had more than Relis.
Well, was Relis an important witness?
Relis was the one witness who was not involved in the crime.
But did he know about it, in your judgment?
And that's depended on Relis as the independent.
And that's why he was locked up in the hotel to hold him. Was that it?
Not for that one case alone, but that is why he was in the hotel.
And are you familiar with the facts about his death?
I am.
And what's your version of it?
That he tried to escape.
That he tried to escape?
Yes, sir.
Then your testimony contravenes the testimony of Mr. Balls, who was before us the other day, whose thesis now is that he didn't try to escape, that he rigged together the sheet and the wire and let himself out the window with the intention of crawling in the floor below and coming up and tapping on the door and say, peekaboo, I'm back again.
Okay.
So $100,000 in 1941, think how much money that was. That was almost like $1 million today, probably. Probably was like $1 million today.
Probably enough to retire. Wonder if either one of those officers guarding him retired shortly thereafter.
I don't know.
They stayed on the beat.
I've never read anything about the follow-up investigation on the people that... I think it's more fun just to, rather than really know the truth, it's more fun to talk about what could have happened. What would they have done with the money? Could they have gotten away with it? Would the mob let them get away with it? Because they're always out there, a knife at their throat.
Mm-hmm.
They could always put them in jail for that. So who knows? Maybe he did try to climb down some sheets and just
trying
get
to get
away.
Decided he wanted to get away.
I just wanted to get away.
If you're going to tie sheets together, wouldn't you tie it? And you know you're on the sixth floor.
I don't know.
Maybe he figured if I make it to the fifth floor,
you kick in the window and
I'll make
and
it to the
in.
First.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out he didn't make it to the fifth, but he did make it to the first floor.
Now, when I was 12 years old, I could shinny up that rope in the gym, and I could have done that. Now, I couldn't do it today. How about you, Aaron? You think you could shinny up one of those ropes in the gym or climb down some sheets? Could you hang on? How long could you hang on? About 2 minutes or 3 minutes, and I'd just be done. And that's probably what this guy was. He probably thought he could do it, and he did it. But, you know, it's all
speculation.
Speculation. Because
a guy flying out of a window, it's hard to tell the difference between the guy flying out of the window and the guy letting go of the bed sheet.
Really?
They didn't have the forensics back then that they do now.
Well, moving right along, the very next year, in 1942, Anastasia supposedly ordered the murder of an associate, a guy named Anthony Romeo. And Romeo had been arrested, and he was going to implicate Anastasia in several murders. However, by June of 1942, Romeo's body was discovered near Guyancourt, Delaware. He had been beaten and shot multiple times. It seems like if you come against Albert Anastasia, you end up dead. There's a whole bunch of them.
Well, wouldn't be the case if you know anything about these murders that you want to come forward and implicate him on, you're probably doing that because you were there when they occurred?
More than likely, yeah. You have to have some kind of decent evidence. And I mean, you would have to have some case on you that, you know, like a murder case on you.
But apparently the newspapers didn't really report this as well as you would think they would, because Relis, who was found dead, it didn't impact this other guy, Anthony Romeo's, decisions to, like, rat him out.
Well, you never know. I mean, you have to be put in a position of, you caught a case and you're looking at life in prison or maybe a murder, or maybe a death penalty. Why, you know, you might be willing to take a chance. And you're going to take a chance with the jury. You're going to take a chance with Anastasia finding out about it and having you killed. Right now, it seemed like you'd be better off taking your chance with the jury than with Albert Anastasia.
Yeah, his track record isn't so good on letting people go.
No, he does not give you a break.
Well, but I mean, we're talking about, this is essentially, I mean, World War II is going on. I thought that the mob had kind of made a truce with the government.
That's a good one.
Over, like, the longshoremen and stuff, so they could get supplies out and all that. Wasn't that? I thought I read that somewhere.
Oh, yeah, and there is a famous story on that Luciano is in jail. And Anastasia has an idea. He comes up with a plan that maybe he can get Luciano out of jail by helping with the war effort. And at this point in time, this is 1942-43, the Allies, you know, we started in England, and Germany has taken over all of Italy and Sicily. And actually, the Italian army at this point under Mussolini are partners with Germany. They've gone into North Africa. It's primarily Germans, though, that they're fighting and taken over all of North Africa. The Allies have landed in North Africa and taken North Africa and Egypt back from the Germans, and they have retreated back to Sicily and Italy, southern Italy. Well, the Allies, led by the Americans and the British, want to invade Sicily, and then from there use that as a jumping-off point to invade the rest of Italy and start pushing the Germans and defeat the Mussolini's fascist army and defeat them and push the Germans back up into Germany, back across the Alps and into Germany.
Yeah, it was the soft underbelly. The problem with the underbelly really is the Alps, and it turned out the Germans were willing to fight, and it wasn't that soft.
He did work a deal for Luciano, and what he did was he promised there would be no labor problems on the waterfronts. They would look for German saboteurs. They would be like like spies for the domestic spies for the military and the FBI on the waterfronts, because we did have some saboteurs from Germany land in the United States, and that's one thing they wanted to attack were the shipping, because we were shipping all those supplies over to England at that point in time and they wanted to see, you know, when convoys left and things like that. So he created this kind of, you know, all his people who were working on the longshore on the waterfronts. And he orchestrated a deal, and he did get lighter treatment for Luciano. And then in a parole exchange for the mafia protecting the waterfront, and then Luciano also gave him some assistance in Sicily so they could help, they could invade Sicily a little easier. Luciano was released, and he was sent back over to Italy or back to Sicily during the war. Vito Genovese is already escaped a criminal charge and gone to Sicily. 1945, U.S. military authorities have taken over Sicily, and they returned Genovese to the United States for a murder charge. But guess what? Guess what, Aaron? What happened to the main prosecution witness?
What usually happens to witnesses?
They die, man. I tell you what, they always die.
Now, is this maybe in part because when you have a defense attorney and they have to have disclosure so they can cross-examine the witnesses?
You have to
know
get
a list
witnesses.
Of who the witnesses are?
Yeah, this is the United States. You cannot be charged in with the crime without having the opportunity to confront your witnesses.
Yeah, and apparently they have no problem confronting their witnesses, just not on the stand.
They like to confront them in the street.
Yeah. Now, here it says, I'm looking at this, it says in 1942, Anastasia joined the U.S. Army.
Yeah, everybody joined, even, you know, all the movie stars even joined the U.S. Army in 1942. Of course, part of it might have been motivated by his desire to escape all the different criminal investigations that were going into after Murder Incorporated at the time. He actually was advanced to the rank of technical sergeant. He trained soldiers to be longshoremen at Fort Indiantown Gap in Pennsylvania. And actually, in 1943, as a reward for his military service, Anastasia received U.S. citizenship. He was honorably discharged from the Army in 1944. War's over. Thomas Dewey, the governor of New York, who famously ran against our Missourian, Harry Truman, and remember the famous headline, they screwed up, they thought Dewey had won the election, and Harry Truman has a big picture of himself just after he won the election that says Dewey defeats Truman. Well, Dewey, who was an old crime fighter, he had been a Attorney General in New York, or he had been the U.S. Attorney one, and he had really been a zealous advocate to prosecute mob cases in New York. He commuted Luciano's sentence and had him deported to Italy. That's what I thought. So he spends most of the rest of his life in Italy. 1948, Albert Anastasia buys a dressmaking factory in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and left the waterfront activities to the control of his brother Anthony.
In the Brooklyn section of New York, Anthony Anastasia, Tough Tony, was the boss of the ILA. His power came not from his union rank, but from his high standing in the mafia. His rackets were often investigated, but he always came out proclaiming his innocence.
They give you a bad time in there.
There was the most bunch of gentlemen I ever met in my life.
We know you have a right to refuse to sign, Tony, but we're wondering the reason.
You have a right to tell us what you said legally.
Believe me sincere. Believe me sincere. They treat me as a gentleman, and I answer every question as a gentleman to them.
Have you been asked to come back again?
No, sir. No?
Tony, you said some things about the investigation when you went in. Why have you changed your mind? Now you won't talk about it.
You see, when a man is no stealing, a man is not taking no kickback, a man is not committing a crime and never got to worry about.
Tough Tony was a captain in the mafia family led by his notorious brother Albert. For 30 years, Albert Anastasia was the mafia's most ruthless enforcer, the head of its assassination squad, Murder Incorporated.
You know, he's already deeply ensconced in the unions that the seamstresses and all the people that work in in the fashion industry. So this would make sense. He would probably had some kind of hold over somebody that had a dressmaking factory in Pennsylvania, and he goes out there
and gets it turned over to him. And then proceeds to get maybe fabrics at a discount.
Yeah.
Because they would be lifted off of trucks.
Good union contracts and all those kinds of things when you don't have to play by the rules.
Now, but about this time, they had the Kiefhofer hearings came about after the war in 1951.
I declined to answer.
What ground?
On the grounds that it may tend to incriminate or lead me into something. I declined to answer.
You are not willing to help your government. Is that correct? You're unwilling to cooperate and to help.
I declined.
Now, there were still the five families in New York at this point.
Right. By this point in time, he was still an underboss of the what's known as the Mangamo family, which became the Vito Genovese family, because he goes way back with Genovese. Genovese's ran off to Italy. He comes back. He beats a murder case. So he's back. Now, this Mangamo has been the boss of this one family for quite a while, but he didn't really, he kind of resented Anastasia's close ties to Luciano, Lucky Luciano, and Frank Costello. Particularly, Mangano was old school. He didn't like it that Anastasia had done a lot of things for Luciano and Costello without their ever asking Mangano's permission. You know, this is like, this is a deal. This is my guy. You know, I've got wiretaps that even in modern times they say, this is our guy. This, you know what that means? Joe Lombardo's talking about Alan Dorfman in Chicago. Well, Dorfman's not a member of the mob. He is a Jewish guy like some of these others who are just mob associates. And he's trying to collect some money from another Jewish guy down in St. Louis, a casino owner named Morris Schenker. And he said, Alan's our guy. You know what that means, don't you? He's our guy. Anything that Alan gets, we get a piece of that.
So Anastasia is actually Luciano and Costello's guy.
Well, actually, he's supposed to be Mangano's guy, but he came up with Luciano and Costello. They were the young guys, the young Turks that came up and really formed this modern-day National Crime Syndicate. So he had been doing a lot of things with them. And this created lots of disputes between Mangano and Anastasia. And what happens when you get in a dispute with Albert Anastasia? Aaron, what happens?
Usually you end up dead.
In early 1951, Vincent Mangano went missing, and his body was never found. April 1951, his brother's body was found shot three times in Bergen Beach, Brooklyn, in a wetlands. No one was ever arrested for the Mangano murders.
The brother was Philip Mangano.
Right.
Mangano.
See, if you're gonna head out, you're gonna go out on a vendetta, you're gonna kill off a mob guy, you better kill his brothers too.
Well, wait, but this guy was one of the five bosses, wasn't he? No, he was an underboss.
No, Anastasia was an underboss. Mangano was the boss of one of the five families.
One of the five families,
which became the Vito Genovese family. So he was a boss. He was one of the five bosses. He had to have had the approval of Lucky Luciano and Frank Costello and some of the other bosses before you could go take out a boss like that.
And once you do that, you know that their family is going to be looking for you.
Right. Now, after the death of the Mangano brothers, Anastasia now becomes the acting boss of that family. Well, the commission calls him in. Now, I'm not sure if they really call him in. I got a feeling that this was already a done deal. He claims, when they ask him about it, he claims that they had wanted to kill him, but he did not admit to killing them. Frank Costello then made a motion, shall we say. He probably didn't do Robert's Rules of Orders, did they? And make a motion and somebody seconds it. Costello suggests that they go ahead and confirm Anastasia as the boss of this Mangano's crime family. And actually, it was renamed the Anastasia family. Costello really had ulterior motives. He wanted Anastasia is an ally against the ambitious and resentful Vito Genovese. See, Vito Genovese at this point in time, I thought he was going to take over this family, but he was trying to take over the Frank Lucky Luciano's old family, and Frank Costello was operating while Luciano was over in Italy. Anastasia was also supported by a guy named Joseph Bonanno, who had his own family and became a famous mobster and crime boss of one of the five families on up into the 70s.
Well, I'm just wondering here. So the Mangano brothers, they were one of he was a mob boss, his brother obviously part of their organization. Anastasia comes and kills them. Anastasia comes in and kills them, and then he gets to be the head of their family. How does everybody else fall in line underneath him?
That's how it works, man. The power, the person with the power, to the victor belong the spoils. So everybody else is just going to fall in line underneath him. And he probably, see, they, when you do stuff like that, you line up a lot of key people. Okay, Aaron, we're getting pretty close to the end of our time here. We try to keep these to 30 minutes so people can listen to one of these on their commute. Most commutes are 30 minutes long. Or for me, it takes me about 30 minutes to go to sleep. I like to listen to a podcast as I go to sleep at night. Of course, sometimes you listen to these and it might keep you up. But let's go ahead and wind this up. By this point in time, we're about 1952, 51, later 51, 52. Frank Costello has gotten Anastasia promoted to the boss of the Mangano family, who he has been working for as the underboss for quite some time. Mangano had been the boss of this one family for 5 years or for 20 years. Killed both him and his brother. As I said, you know, if you're going to kill one guy, if he's got a brother, you better go ahead and have him killed too. He's got everybody lined up, and he is now the boss of the family, and Costello has him as his ally. He's always been his ally because they came up together. Also got another family boss named Joseph Bonanno, who wants to keep things quiet, keep these gang wars down so they don't all have to go to the mattresses, I think they coined that phrase in The Godfather. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what happens to Anastasia as he has become a mob boss. You know, when you become a mob boss, you become more of a target for law enforcement and for other people, too.
Other bosses, other people wanting to move up. Lucky Luciano is here supporting him as well.
Right, but he's in Italy, so he can only support him through Frank Costello. But he's like, you know, he and Frank Costello are still tight, and he still has some say-so. Joseph Bonanno is supporting him because he wants to keep problems down. You got Vito Genovese, who is wanting to take over as boss of bosses and take over the Lucky Luciano family and take it away from Frank Costello. We talked about that before with Bill Friedman, that he actually sent a guy to shoot Frank Costello, and Costello forgave the guy, refused to testify against him, and then when he came back out after the trial in which he was found not guilty, then he even had a party and embraced the guy, and Frank Costello just backed off from mob activities and let Vito Genovese take over that original Lucky Luciano crime family. Sometimes it's more trouble than it's worth. So having said all that, let's close out. You know, my favorite nonprofit is First Call. If you have a friend, relative, a coworker, a boss, a subordinate who has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I've got to say, remember to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app, available for your iPhone, where you can take your own personal tour of notorious Kansas City locations that the mob either hang out at or that they live at or that they committed crimes at. And remember to rent the movie that started it all, the documentary Gangland Wire. It's available on Amazon to buy or rent it. And also remember to follow us and subscribe to our iTunes account for Gangland Wire. And give us a comment, give us some feedback as to if you enjoy these episodes.
And give us a review on iTunes. It helps, folks. It helps a lot. It helps us up in the standings.
And if you enjoy the episode so much, feel free to put a hit out on our donate button.
Yes. We've gotten some pretty good donations here lately. And our good friend Barry Parks from up north, we're operating on some of our new equipment tonight, Barry. I'll when I get home and tomorrow's next day, I'll edit this show, and I'm hoping to have a little bit better sound. I think we will.
I think Gary sounds a lot better. He got a microphone.
Got a new microphone.
Audio Technica.
Recorder.
A Gemini. Digital recorder.
We may have to get a new mix board. We'll see. I don't know if we really need a mix board or not. Do those things wear out? I don't think they wear out.
You know, we've had this since about 2009 here on the Big Dumb Fun Show, and it still seems to be working. But when we got your mic tonight, first time we've been using it, it sounds great.
Oh, good. It seemed like it to me on the feedback on the earphones. So I guess that's all I got. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Follow them on Facebook at Odd-O-Matic Music.